Let's see, and if it messes things up, then
blame yourself.
Oh, I heard it.
Yes, you did. I got it fixed.
You're the man.
White Rocket Entertainment. White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 348.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. And by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and we're back, John. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And it's been a little while, John. We took a couple of weeks off. I even rebroadcast the match game show last week, just to give folks a little entertainment. I'm sure we have a number of new listeners that weren't around in 2015 when we first put that show out. That show was a great labor of love. And you and Kerry were both very good sports to put up with it. But now we're back live, more or less. So how are things treating you this summer?
Things are well, and we're at that point of the summer where the first hint of football is peeking over the horizon at us, and it's very exciting.
It's not an oncoming freight train, although it might be. It's the oncoming football. So this is our just regular checking in show for the end of July, last week of July pretty much. And then I'm going on vacation. You've got stuff going on here and there, but we absolutely are going to get in the barbecue shows, aren't we?
Yes, we have planned, we have scheduled those, we worked out the dates with our various calendars, and we have already begun some research on mm-hmm. the barbecue preview episodes about mm-hmm. what I think about the different teams, what kind of interesting numbers are out there about these teams, and who are they playing, and who do they have back, and that kind of stuff. And I'm not going to give anything away, but I want to say this. In the SEC Media Days really brought this home as I was starting to do some of this research. I'm very excited about all the changes in the SEC because, honestly, a lot of SEC stuff had gotten boring. You knew what you were going to get out of Arkansas, basically.
Yeah.
You knew kind of what you were going to get out of Texas A&M.
Yeah.
You know, the East was, other than Georgia, the East was abysmally terrible last year. I mean, historically bad. And now we have a brand new, you know, offense at Mississippi State, something completely different. We're going to have a brand new offense and a new coaching staff at Arkansas, completely different. Not something we're used to seeing. We're going to have Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M do completely different stuff than they have done recently. And we're going to have, new coach, different styles at Florida and Tennessee. And I just think the SEC had kind of gotten stale a little bit. Like, I knew before I turned it on kind of what I was going to see if there was like a random, Mississippi State Arkansas game. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm excited to tune into that game because I want to learn. I want to see what those teams become, what their identity is going to try to be. And it's different. So that part I think is going to be very, very refreshing. There's a lot of teams that are, have kind of bottomed out and are trying to rebound and move back up on the upswing. And so that kind of thing is always interesting to me.
Yeah. So you've done a lot of research on the barbecue shows as far as that goes. I, too, have done a lot of research, and my research is telling me it may be Sugar Fire Barbecue this year. That's where my research has led me, is to a lovely new barbecue place up north of Belleville in O'Fallon, Fairview Heights. But you know what I just thought? This just occurred to me. We should get a sponsor for the barbecue shows, an actual barbecue place to sponsor it. And of course, it would want to be someplace not up here or where you are, but down in Auburn area, down the Birmingham, Auburn, Montgomery area. So if you're listening and you have connections with any barbecue place in Alabama that you think might be interested, we work cheap. We're affordable. We're talking low price. We will happily refer to you multiple times throughout both shows as the official barbecue sponsor of the AU Wishbone SEC Barbecue East and SEC West Barbecue Previews. Just get in touch. That's all you got to do. Just get in touch. Which, by the way, reminds me, I'll go ahead and mention this now before I forget. For those that don't know, we now have a website just for this show and its various endeavors. So if you're, it has a link to the Patreon page. It's just going to be easier on everybody for me just to be able to say auwishbone.com. That's all you got to do. I mean, you may need the www. I'm not really sure, but just auwishbone.com will now get you to all the shows. It'll get you to the Patreon if you decide you want to join up on the Patreon or whatever, or just go to that page and check it out. You don't have to type in all the patreon.com/VanAlbe, all that. Just go to auwishbone.com. There's a direct link to everything. There's a link to all of our books on Amazon. All the AU Wishbone stuff we've done so far and everything we add on will be at auwishbone.com. And it's a pretty basic site right now because I learned my website building in 1995. but it'll only get better as we add stuff on. So check out auwishbone.com. And again, let me know if you know of a barbecue place that wants to throw a couple of bucks our way, and we will happily make them the official sponsor of our big, very popular SEC East and SEC West barbecue preview. And for those that don't know, what we do is John and I each have some barbecue in front of us when we do those shows. And as we look at each team in the East and then in the West, we use the taste of the barbecue to magically, mystically reveal to us the record each team will finish with this season. We've done this for several years. It's very popular. I usually come up with some kind of a TV show, movie type, musical motif for it. I hadn't thought of one for this year yet for either one of them. But if you have any ideas, let me know, John. But anyway, let's get to the football. Let's get to the business. And then I'll mention our other big project coming up a little bit later. So we are getting close to the season. This is already late July. I mean, when does everything really get in full swing down there? I guess SEC Media Days just happened, so.
Yes, SEC Media Days just happened. Auburn was picked second in the West and third overall in the conference. And practice starts, I believe, around August 1st.
Okay.
So there are a couple. We got some updates from Gus over SEC Media Days. Nothing earth shattering. There's three players who aren't on campus yet. Mm. One is our Australian punter, who's supposed to be there, no problem. One is Anthony Schwartz, who's been running in national track and field events all summer. That's and cool. Doing great stuff there. And then one is a defensive lineman. I think it's Cornelius Miller, I believe. And he's supposed to be on campus for practice then. So gave updates on a couple of injured guys. The two receivers are still, looking more at the middle of the season. Mm-hmm. But the offensive linemen that were banged up, they think they're going to be back for this sort of practice, basically.
Oh, yeah, I was going to ask you about that because I knew that we had we had a number of injuries over the last few months.
Yeah, the two receivers, Hastings and what's his name that runs Stove, Eli Stove. They're more middle of the season, but the other thing and we'll talk about this in a minute, this kind of leads to another discussion, is the way the redshirt rules have changed. There's no reason not to bring them out and let them play when they get back, if they can help the team. So, I everybody else, I think, is in pretty good shape, fully healthy and ready to go for fall practice. you know, the big, in terms of topics, there was no controversy, crazy stuff at SEC Media Days this year. I mean, the topics they discussed, the big ones that were different is
the headphone rule.
Well, that's one where they're trying to limit so that coaching staffs can't have 50 guys on the sideline who were all plugged into the headphones.
Right.
Because you're only allowed to have so many coaches, and then you're allowed to have a couple of GAs and other people who are helping you do the signals and stuff, but you end up with 30 people, you know, analysts and all these other people on the headphones, and it's like a lot of this other stuff. It becomes an advantage for teams that have more resources because you have more guys. And Gus doesn't like it because he likes to have decoy guys signaling in the plays and that kind of stuff.
You could just have those not plugged in, right? They could just use the Bobby Bowden formula of put a headset on him, don't plug it in, and let him just kind of stand there and think he's doing something.
And he's talking and nobody's listening.
Exactly.
But the big issue is, I mean, one proposal is that the SEC should go to a 9-game schedule and eliminate a non-conference game.
I'm in with that.
I mean, I'm either in with that or doing away with the hard divisional structure of the schedule and going to more of like a pods rotated kind of thing. Whatever it takes so that we play more teams from the East more often.
Yes. Yes.
I want to play Florida and Tennessee more often than we do now.
And
Missouri in your case.
Yes. Come up here more than every 12 years. I'm going to get to see 3 games and die. And that's if I'm lucky. But did you hear this is the first graduating class in Auburn history that never played Florida?
That's crazy.
In like 5+ years, they never played Florida. Something like that.
Unless we played them in the SEC title game.
No, the last time we played them was 2011. So we didn't play them in 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. I think that's right, isn't it? I think the last time we played them was 11. I think that's right. I'm not positive, but I think that's right. I know it's been a while. I know we beat them, but it's been a while since we played them. I think last time we played them, they had Muschamp as their coach. So that would have been back then. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, Gus and Nick Saban both came out for the 9-game schedule thing. And I think other conferences are going that way. I think eventually the SEC is going to go that way. Because the other part of it is it's revenue. I mean, it's another game each week that you can sell to. It's another game for every team in the conference. And, you know, so that's whatever 14 teams. I'll do the math in a minute. But it's a lot of extra games. 14 teams a game apiece against. That's an extra game a week, basically, is what it comes out to. And that's games that aren't on TV now. Maybe you're playing a small school, a non-Power 5 school, and so now those would be SEC games. It'd be on CBS or whatever. Theoretically, CBS would owe more money for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
but you're in favor of that, right?
Well, I just feel like the way they've got it structured right now, you play one team in the East every year, and we get Georgia. And this is not the time you want Georgia to be your every year team, and nobody else has to play Georgia every year in the West, just us. And then the other 6 teams, I mean, if you're going to add another team and make the conference you're going to add 2 more teams and make the conference 14 teams, the other 6 teams, you play them in their stadium every 12 years, and that's ridiculous. Or you play them in your stadium every 12 years, and that's ridiculous. So,
yes.
It's just, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, like I said, we've played Clemson way more than we played Missouri, for example. And they're not even in our, we've played bowl games against Clemson more often, not just, you know, scheduling them. It's like there are teams outside the SEC that we just run into in postseason and non-conference games way more often than teams in our own conference. I mean, remember, the question I asked you last year was, when does it really stop being a conference when you never play some of the teams in it?
No, it's like the West is our conference, and the East is we're just affiliated with them.
Affiliate. Kind of. Yeah, I mean the East for us might as well be the Pac-10 when they used to play the Big Ten in the Rose Bowl every year.
Yeah, I mean, the baseball analogy is it's like the old days where it's the National League and the American mm-hmm. League, and they only meet in the title game. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but I think and that's exactly the same analogy I just made is think about it. When you had a smaller Pac-10 or Pac-8 and you had the Big Ten with Michigan, Ohio State and all, then the only time they played each other was once a year in the Rose Bowl. But they always played each other once a year in the Rose Bowl. And so that's kind of how it is for us. Once a year, we play a team from that other conference called the SEC East in the out of division bowl. We ought to have a trophy for it. They ought to have like the out of division bowl, the out of division trophy. And it could be like a trophy shaped like a map with a magnifying glass and a guy scratching his head, like he doesn't know how to find it. Yeah. So. Anyway, like a golden GPS.
The other issue that came up in media days, and not issue, but just the new people discussion, the new rule is the redshirt rule, which basically says that you can play in up to four games without losing your redshirt, without any of this kind of fake injury stuff.
Right.
And it's not the first games either. It could be at any point in the season. So there's some real strategy here. Like if you're Auburn, there's some players that, you know, you want a red shirt, but maybe you could use you. Number one, this could be an opportunity for them to get some playing time and for you to rest some good players. But also maybe there's a situation like we ran into with Georgia years ago where we literally didn't have another healthy running back.
Yeah.
And we could pop the, you know, you're not burning the red shirt in this guy to play one game. You could literally, you know, if Asa Martin isn't every down running back, but we need him to get some carries in some games later in the year, we could bring him in and give him the ball in those games. And it'll give him a chance to earn playing, you know, to show what he can do, but it'll also allow us to rest and get guys healthy for, you know, the bigger games down the schedule. And the other thing it does is it, like a lot of times in the past, coaching staffs had to make decisions about these guys, like at the very beginning of the season. They're in or they're out. And if they're out, they're on the scout team, whatever. We coach them a little bit, but we're not so worried about really teaching them during the season. That's spring stuff and preseason stuff. Because we know, like, the way the redshirt rule works, we're not going to play them. And now you have a real incentive to keep – if there's guys you think have the physical ability to play and they just don't know the system, you have a real incentive to keep teaching those guys, to keep coaching those guys. And then they could show up at mid-year if you have some injuries or depth issues and make a difference.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's big.
Yep. So it'd be interesting to see how Auburn uses that this year. It'd be something we have to try and keep track of and talk about.
That's right. That's right. In other news, I will demonstrate something by my final word on the conference being divided and playing only eight games, and that is.
And that's nothing but pure and simple old-fashioned communism.
There you go. And John heard that because I've got the soundboard fixed. To which John replied,
"You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious."
And I said, "Well, just
blame yourself."
And there was great rejoicing.
Oh, my God!
But it is good in that, in addition to me throwing in random sound effects like that, it does mean we can do things like the eventual return of the...
Factoid of the Week.
Factoid of the Week.
Or the always popular...
My cold, dead hands.
Lock of the Week.
Now, these are things that we haven't been able to do in a while because the soundboard was down, but... Thanks to Skype getting their act together and updating and fixing whatever they had done to ruin it, it's working again. So we're good to go. So,
thanks, Skype.
Oh, no. John says,
why does every day involve a fight with an American?
No. All right. Well, you did a survey of our patrons.
I did. And now I'm going to ask, what we're going to do is I'm going to ask Van on air the questions I asked in the survey, and then we're going to discuss your answers, and then I'm going to tell you, you know, kind of what the patrons, how the patrons answered, okay?
I was not told there would be a test. I didn't.
You're in the. Aren't you the one who gives exams all the time?
I am, but I'm supposed to give them, not. Okay, so what this is, John did a very clever survey of some stuff we wanted to ask, and our patrons. It's one of the many perks you get as being one of our patrons is that you get to participate and give big feedback like this and be asked these questions. So I'll pitch that later, but I just want to point that out. So let it fly.
All right, first question, and I'm going to read you some positions, and I want you to kind of rank them from you're most worried about them for the 2018 season, okay, to least worried about them.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, so here's the positions, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Quarterback, running back. I'm just going to run through them first, and then we'll come back to them more slowly, okay?
Yeah.
Quarterback, running back, receiver, offensive line, special teams kicker and punter, special teams returns and kick coverage, defensive line, linebacker, and defensive back, secondary.
Okay. Let me first say the ones I'm not really worried about. I'm not worried about defensive line. That's probably my point of least concern. I'm not worried about linebackers. I hate losing Carlton Davis, but the secondary should still be okay. So those are the three main areas of defense I feel pretty good about. And you know, that's a good feeling to have.
That's a very good feeling to have.
I don't think we've had a lot of reason to be concerned about our kick coverage, either punting or kicking, so I feel all right about it, even though our punting itself, we got to wait and see. So I'm a bit concerned about punting. Place kicking, I'm as concerned as I would be having any first-year kicker, except that I know who it is, so I have less concern than I normally would with an untried kicker. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So I think I've covered defense and special teams. Now let's look at the offense. Offensive line is probably my area of most concern for two reasons. One, they haven't played as well as they probably should have the last couple of years, and we lost a couple of our better players along the offensive line, if not more than a couple.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got good talent, good players coming in, but they have to do the proverbial gelling. So we'll see. And I feel like they're getting good coaching now. I don't think they were getting bad coaching before. I feel like they're getting better coaching now. I like how when we brought Herb Hand in, we were all like, oh, he's going to really help Gus. They've worked together before. It'll be great. And now when we get rid of him, we're like, oh, we're bringing our old guy back. They'll get better coaching. It'll be great. So we're always looking for the bright side, you know, and that's good. That's good. That leaves quarterback, running back, receiver. I wouldn't be concerned about receiver except for the injuries. That's the main thing. If not for the injuries, I would feel like, man, that is a position of strength that almost rivals the defensive line, honestly, or the linebackers. So we'll have to just see, A, what the guys that are not hurt can do, and B, can those hurt guys come back and contribute? Because the two guys that are out are very, very different. You know, one is the sweep guy, and the other is the sort of scat receiver. So, you know, we'll have to see. Quarterback and running back, I'm not quite as concerned about. Obviously, the problem at quarterback is depth. We were very fortunate last year that even though he did get hurt, and he got hurt in the Missouri game pretty early on, Stidham was able to go the entire season. And that's huge. He turned out to be, I think, physically and maybe mentally tougher than I thought he would be. I'm not saying I thought anything bad about him. I just, he looks to me, he you know, we're used to seeing Cam, you know, and these big guys, and nobody looks like that. And even Nick Marshall, even though he was smaller, he still was put together like a small running back almost. So then you look at Stidham, and Stidham just doesn't have that guy that lives in the weight room look. He's strong, but he doesn't have that muscle-bound, you know, look like some guys. And so I was concerned that he wouldn't be able to hold up against some of the defensive lines like Clemson, Georgia, Alabama, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, and he only played 3 games of college football at Baylor and got hurt. So.
Exactly. So he surprised me. Now you're asking him to do it another year. And as much as we like Willis, Malik Willis, and he is Nick Marshall-like with his legs, he is not yet Nick Marshall-like with his arm. And so and Joey Gatewood, of course, is just starting out. So if, God forbid, something, knocking on wood, particle board, if something should happen to Stidham, that costs us 2 or 3 games, I think. So I'm concerned only in the sense of depth. And, you know, for next year, man, we better be developing those two guys. And, of course, we have Bo Nix coming in, but he'll be a true freshman. So,
well, I want to be clear. Stidham could come back, I believe.
He could, but he almost went pro last year. So
yes, and the hype is building already. About him,
I think that Stidham would have to, like, miss half the season to come back another year. Just to feel like he needed to get another season in. Kind of like Cadillac after, you know, he got his shoulder broken or whatever, his leg that time. One of his many injuries. Okay, and then lastly, running backs. And running backs is a whole other thing because we've got depth, but we don't have any proven depth at all. I don't know if you saw, I was tweeting, I went back and watched the Texas A&M game last night, this morning on YouTube. And the thing that impressed me was we only used him like one drive in the whole first half and into the third quarter, but they did put Cam Martin out there for like 2/3 of a drive. They pulled him when we got to like the 30, which would have ticked me off if I was Cam Martin. But he carried the ball for a first 2/3 of a drive in the first half, and he looked great.
Yes.
He got like a 9-yard carry. Like a 5-yard carry, he never got a negative carry. So, I feel like they could have used him more last year and gotten him some more experience.
I think that's fair. I want to say, for the most part, I agree with you. I think offensive line for me is the biggest concern. But I would tell you that because Stidham played all last year, and I think he's going to be better this year. Like, quarterback is way down on my list of worries.
And it should be right up until something, God forbid, should happen, and then it's going to be at the top of your freaking worries at that point.
I get it, but I mean, like, to me, I'm much more worried about offensive line.
Yeah.
You know, running back, I'm more worried about just because I don't know. Mm-hmm. So let me give you the results of what our friends said in this poll. Are you ready?
Yeah.
They ranked their most concerned positions this way, from most to least concerned. Okay.
Okay.
Offensive line number one.
Sure.
Running back number two. Special teams return and coverage number three.
Interesting.
I mean, we have been kind of bad at this in the last couple of years. We had a reputation as being great at it.
Yeah.
And then we've kind of fallen off, and we got to turn that around to get better. They had secondary fourth when we have a lot of talent there, but we had some turnover and lost some experienced guys. Carlton, right. Like you said, Carlton Davis was a great player. We have some talented guys there, but some of them are a little bit unproven. Receiver next, because like you said, the injuries. Then special teams, kicker, punter, then linebacker, defensive line, and the position they were least worried about was quarterback.
Well, interesting. Even more than defensive line, even less than defensive line. Wow. All right. Well, I guess I've just, you know, seen Auburn play football before, but maybe they haven't.
No, come on.
I just mean things tend to go wrong, you know. Well, I'm saving this up, John. I have a lot to say about 2018 Auburn, but I'm saving a lot of it for the barbecue show, for our preview. But I'm just saying, it worries me having so many eggs and so few baskets. But we'll see how it comes out. We'll see how it goes. Here's a question for you. Think how big the Wildcat was in our offense last year. I mean, we didn't just, you know, use it at key points. We started drives with it.
Well, and it was one of our main goal lines.
Yes.
Too.
The whole time Kerryon was there, it was a big thing. Who's going to run that? Are we just going to quit running it?
I don't know. I mean, I think it could be a thing where we bring Malik Willis in and run the read option instead of doing the Wildcat so much. Or I know the running back, Jatavius Whitlow, played quarterback in high school. So theoretically, he could be a Wildcat quarterback.
Like,
but we'll see. That's a big question.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. All right.
All right. Next question, number two. Which of these is your biggest concern for 2018? And your choices are media or fan expectations are too high, replacing Kerryon Johnson and Cameron Petway, replacing Jeff Holland, Gus's traditional slow start on offense, or the tough schedule?
Well, I think the tough schedule's got to be number one. But after that, just because it doesn't do us any favors at all, but after that, oh, crap. You had one toward the beginning that I thought was probably the biggest one.
Replacing Kerryon and Petway?
Yeah.
Expectations too high?
Both, yeah. Replacing them is probably a little bit higher. Expectations is not a concern. I mean, expectations just happen. That's like saying I'm concerned it might rain during a game. It's just one of those things that happens, and you have no control over it. So, you know, it is what it is, as Saban says. So, it's a concern in that our fan base tends to go a little bug nuts crazy at the drop of a hat. And if expectations are high and we lose a couple of games early, which is entirely possible, then, you know, God help us what they're going to say and what people are going to be doing and what buildings are going to be jumping off of and bridges are going to be jumping off of. But, no, I think replacing key players, particularly on offense, is really – I'm not so worried about replacing Holland because I feel like our defensive line is good enough. And we've got people like Big Cat, you know. So I think we'll be all right there.
It's funny. Like, 2 years ago, we lost Carl Lawson, and everybody was freaking out about where's the pass rush going to come
from. That's what I'm saying. I feel like it's going to –
And then Holland came through and was really good last year, and now everybody's like, we'll find some money.
You'll find – yeah, I mean, exactly. It's like – well, it's because we've had a year of seeing that we did. So now we hope we can do it again. So, you know, it's not a given.
You didn't choose a slow start on offense for Gus.
Mm-mm. No, because that's usually when he's trying to figure out what he wants to do. And we didn't really – I don't remember us having a slow start in 2014 on offense, and that's because he knew exactly what he had. He had Nick Marshall running and throwing it, and he had Cameron Artis Payne. There was nothing to figure out. 2013 was a slow start because he didn't know what we had. We had three different guys had to sort that out, you know. So,
and I would point to last year a little bit that way too. Like, he was still trying to figure out what he had with Stidham, and we had the whole Petway carry on thing going on. So I think you're right. I think the offense, in my mind, I think the offense is going to start faster.
I got to mention this. One of my good friends, that's my Georgia buddy fan, my Georgia fan friend. All right. He was pointing out that Cam Petway just signed with, like, the Columbus indoor football team that he's a reporter for. He's a cameraman for. And I was saying, you know, just imagine – because it's hard for me to remember that Petway just left. And I just keep thinking, John, what would last season have been like if Pettway and Kerryon Johnson had both been 100% for most of the season? I mean, it would have been like 2004 with Cadillac and Ronnie Brown. We darn sure wouldn't have lost to Georgia in the SEC championship game. I guarantee it. There's no way. Because we were within one score of them in the fourth quarter with no running game at all this year, last year. You have put in a Pettway that's 100% in the fourth quarter against Georgia? Are you kidding me?
Well, and I was thinking about the LSU game on the road.
Oh, yeah.
Running him in the second half against them.
So. Oh, man. We'd have won both those games by double digits if Pettway had been like he was in 2016. Put Pettway in his prime out there to swap in and out with a healthy Kerryon and see Kerryon won't get hurt because you got Pettway keep him from having to get all those carries banging around. Man, I mean, I honestly think the more I think about it, I mean, the immediate cause of our woes last year was Kerryon getting hurt at the end of the season against Alabama. But the larger term problem was Pettway not being able to play. If Pettway had been anything like 2016 last year, we're in the playoffs. We are in
playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
Do you agree?
I don't know. Okay. I mean, I do think he would have made a difference. I think he was really good. I'm not sure. Like, I think he would have helped. We would not have lost the LSU game if we were running him 20 times in the second half. Mm. But I don't know how much difference he makes against that Georgia defense. I just think, like, they were really fast and really physical. And he would have helped, you're right, because we didn't have any running game at all. And we had, you know, Stidham was kind of running for his life and stuff. And we could have played it a little closer to the vest and, you know, run him more on the inside, maybe got some stuff that way. But, yeah, I mean, I can see how we would have made it. Yeah, in that close game where, we, you know, it kind of slipped away from us.
Right.
There are probably some first downs that he would have helped pick up.
But. You know, I never said this back in the time, but it occurs to me now. You know, Pettway in his prime, you know what he reminded me of? He reminded me of the LSU running backs every time we go to Baton Rouge to play them. You know what I mean? Pettway for us looked like every time we play at LSU and they have one of their big 240-pound backs just freight train us into the end zone for 40 yards. That's what Pettway was doing. It was like we had Leonard Fournette, you know, or the other one, Geis or something. I mean, or the one, you know, a couple of years before that killed us in 13. I mean, that's what it looked like when Pettway was in his prime. It looked like we had one of those LSU running backs in Death Valley on our side. And that was a good feeling. That was a good feeling, man. Oh.
All right, question number three. Which game are you most worried about for 2018? And your choices are the Washington game, at Georgia, at Alabama, or whichever game Vane and John attend because we will jinx it.
Well, Lord help if we jinx that game. We shouldn't have any trouble. I hope.
Oh, you bite your tongue. You better be knocking on the wood again.
I am. As long as we're not down there for 2001, 2002, Arkansas. But yeah, I'm hoping we get to enjoy our trip all the way through. You know, honestly, Georgia and Alabama, I'm just going to go ahead now and figure we probably lose those and just hope for good things, hope that something good happens, you know. It'd take a combination of us playing even better than we think we will and maybe one of them or both of them being a little off of what we think they will. You know, maybe Alabama has a quarterback controversy. Maybe Georgia has a quarterback controversy. Maybe the offensive lines aren't playing well or the loss of all those linebackers at Alabama. But I just feel like me worrying about the Georgia and Alabama games on the road at the end of the season right now is just a fool's errand. And I don't want to waste my time on it. On the other hand, the next game we play is Washington, and that's the one I'm most concerned about. And it would be the case – well, I mean, I think it's mainly the case because it is our first. It's because we don't have a tune-up game. We don't have a Ball State or Louisiana Monroe or anything to start with. And so we got to come right out of the chute with a whole new running game, a whole new offensive line, et cetera, new kicker, against a team that has got a coach that really – puts them together, you know, has them ready to play very consistently. So it's kind of a bad matchup for us in a lot of ways like that, I feel like.
In the sense that they're a very, very good team. They're a well-coached team. I mean, yes. I'm sure people remember the Boise State team that came to Georgia in the Georgia Dome and kicked Georgia's rear end.
Mm-hmm.
That was a Chris Peterson coach team.
Yes, it was.
So he's going to have this team ready to play in the way that team is ready to play. Yeah. And they have a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. You know, returning quarterback, returning running back. You know, some really explosive guys in the secondary. So we're going to, you know, Auburn's going to have to go out there and play a good game to win that game.
I think so. And I'm not going to be, I mean, it's like when we went and played Miami in the first game of 84 in the kickoff classic. I mean, you know, if you lose it, you might still be ranked if it's a close game. And you just buckle up and get back into the SEC. You're not any farther behind the SEC than you were if you'd won it or if you hadn't played it. So you go and play it, get that win if you can, and if you don't, put it aside and get down to business with the SEC.
All right. Our next question we asked for suggestions for who we should interview and have as a guest on the future mm-hmm. podcast. We got a bunch of really good suggestions, which we've been contacting people and trying to schedule them, and I think that's going to go well. And the question after that, I'm interested to hear Van's answer to this. It's which prediction will come true in this season? And here are your choices.
Okay.
Jared Stidham wins the Heisman Trophy.
I doubt it.
Auburn does not have a 1,000-yard rusher for the first time in many years.
I feel like we will. Just how Gus All operates. Right.
A defensive player will have more sacks than Jeff Holland did last year, which is 10.
No, I don't think so.
All right. An Auburn tight end will catch more than 10 passes this season.
I think that one is the most likely. I mean, if we find somebody, that's less than
that
one a game.
That hasn't happened since 2010.
Wow. Wow, yeah. Well, it wasn't for lack of trying with our last couple of tight ends. They just the ball bounced off their hands onto the ground, and they're just like, oops. So, yeah.
All right. Our next choice, Auburn leads the SEC in scoring or total defense.
Wow. No, not with the schedule we play. I mean, it's possible if we were in the SEC East, maybe, but not with the schedule we play, no.
All right, and the last one is Auburn will have a receiver with more than 1,000 yards this season.
That's
receiving.
Did our leading receiver last year have 1,000 yards? I think he did, didn't he?
No, he did not.
He had the most catches.
Ryan Davis
yeah.
had 815 yards.
Wow.
Who was the last Auburn receiver to have 1,000 yards in a season, and when was it?
Well, you know, it ought to be Courtney Taylor in, like, 2005, but it probably wasn't. Or Obamanu, one of those guys. So I'm going to go all the way back. I'm going to say it was Ronnie Daniels in 99.
I'm looking back. I haven't got – let me say this. I know
I don't have facts to back this up. Blame yourself.
Dispel once and for all with this fiction.
And I say you!
Do you have it? No?
We'll come back to this.
All right. I'm going to say Ronnie Daniels in 99, but it should have been somebody since then, but it probably wasn't, honestly.
Well, I mean, Darvin Adams, okay.
In 09?
In 09, he had 997 yards.
Oh.
And in 2010, he had 963 yards.
Oh, Darvin. The Darvin Awards. So,
Dang. I think it was Courtney Taylor, but I'm going to come back to this.
That would have been either 03, 04, 05, I guess.
But the point here is it's been a long time since an individual Auburn receiver had 1,000 yards. Okay?
Yes, it has.
So. It's not like the running back thing. It would be a rare and special occurrence. So I think it would actually be a good thing for Auburn, if, you know, to have a receiver have a big year like that.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, it's not normal.
Right. I think it'll be spread around too much. When Ronnie Daniels had all of his yards, he was the only option we had. We had no running back at all that year. And I'm like, he was the only receiver pretty much. Well, I mean, there were a couple of others. I don't want to insult anybody, but he was like option number one. Option number one usually in an Auburn offense is the running back. A receiver is usually like option number three. He was option one, 1A, and 1B that year. So that's why I think he had 1,000 yards. Is that all the survey?
Almost. But out of those choices, you like the which one do you think is most likely to happen out of this? You like the tight end one?
Yeah, the tight end, yeah. Because I think we'll get a running back over 1,000. I think just the way that Gus's offense works, he's going to settle on somebody and they're going to have like 1,100, 1,200 yards. Because I didn't think we would get it last year, and we easily got it. So, you know.
The next question, you're not going to have to answer, but the question was, how many regular season games will Auburn win in the 2018 season?
Yeah, I'm not allowed to answer that yet. Sorry.
You're not allowed to answer that, but I would tell you that among survey respondents, the most popular answer was 10.
I have things to talk about on the barbecue show, John. I have such things to talk about.
You have things to talk about. All right.
I'm not letting on either way, though. I have things to talk about.
And the last question is one of my favorites. Which opposing team scenario are you rooting for the most? So scenario one, Arkansas is much better after Burt left and people decided he was holding them back. Scenario, what do you think about that one?
I think they can't be much worse than they were at times under him. Yeah.
All right. Scenario number two, LSU's offense is terrible under Ensminger as OC.
Now, see, I'm going to zig instead of zag. I think that Ensminger as offensive coordinator, he's probably going to be terrible, but there's like a 1% chance he could be kind of like our current defensive coordinator. And like have a resurrection, Kevin Steele, right? Everybody could be making fun of him and saying, oh, you hired Kevin Steele. Ha ha ha, Auburn sucks. And then lo and behold, we get like the second coming of Wayne Hall, you know? So, So most likely Ensminger will suck, but there's like a 1% chance he could be Kevin Steele on offense. You know, you never know. Maybe he's been studying, holed up in the library, reading Gus's book on offenses for the last 10 years. Who knows?
The next opposing team scenario is Georgia quarterback controversy.
Oh, please, Lord. Please hear my prayer. Please, and Lord.
The next one is Jimbo Fisher struggles in first year, 6 wins or fewer.
I think they'll probably win maybe 7 games. Gosh, I used to like Jimbo. I hate having to not like him.
$75 million all guaranteed.
I used to like Jimbo, and I don't like not liking him. But you know what? I don't like him. I liked him better as a humble quarterback coach. I don't like him as Terry Bowden Jr. at Florida State and now at Texas A&M, which is what he turned into.
And the number one opposing team scenario, Alabama quarterback controversy.
Oh. You're twice in one show. That would be great.
And I say you.
And the survey respondents definitely chose that one first and the Jimbo Fisher struggling second.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, that's it for the survey. Thank you all for your feedback on that. It was fun and educational, and We will definitely come back to the question about wins during the barbecue episode.
Yes, and if you want to participate in cool things like that that we do, like we've got a Formula One league for fantasy Formula One, which Alan Porter is now dominating, and it makes me mad because I was, the race this weekend, I was rolling in points, John. It was like in fantasy football when your running backs are all plunging into the end zone and scoring, and in the second half of the race, all my racers either crashed or something horrible happened, and Alan's all pulled ahead, and I'm just miserable. Now, if you want to participate in surveys like that, fantasy leagues, all the various things, you get advanced. There's another perk. Our patrons will get early access to our brand new upcoming Auburn, the History of Auburn Fandom mini-series we're doing in kind of the style of the American Fiasco show that Raj Bennett did, The Men in Blazers, where they did like a 12-episode thing. We're doing, I think, a 10-episode mini-series that'll be in the AU Wishbone feed eventually for free. But well before it goes out to the public, our patrons will be able to listen to it and enjoy and even hear like in work in progress and special pieces and all, you know, special interviews. We're going to be interviewing a number of big names and other names and putting together just this big 10-part history of Auburn fan, what it's like, what it's been like to be an Auburn person over the last many years. You get that. You get a lot of benefits. Just go to auwishbone.com. See, this is where this comes in handy. Just go to auwishbone.com. Not only do you have the access to the shows, the books, everything else there, but you can join. Click the big orange button to join the AU Wishbone family for as little as $1 a month. We need your help because we're also doing a live show. We're going to the Arkansas game. Our executive producer is Auburn Elvis. I kid you not. Auburn Elvis is putting together. He is putting together a video live feed that we're going to be putting out. So you'll be hearing a lot more about that as we get closer to September, where you can tune in on YouTube and watch John and me set up like SEC Today or whatever they call their show. That should be awesome. So we got big things coming up this fall and beyond, and we need your help to do it. So go to auwishbone.com, www.auwishbone.com to help out. And of course, we have to thank all of our current patrons. They include Joseph Fine, Christopher Burleson, Samuel Salvatore, Stephen Thompson, Phil M. Thor of WeHaveDonuts.com, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, Justin Bean, Chris Usher, David Evers, Tom Anderson, Timothy, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Steve Harlan, Andrew Barber, Jared Albrick, Rich Reimer, Bill Matthews, Will Summerford, John McCune, Catherine England, Ann Congian, Auburn Tiger Talk, Clay Henson, Jacob and Robin Fleming, as well as David Simpson, Josh Teal, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Earl Ricks, Dave Powell, Michael Kirshner, Mick Vigicana, Matt Rubenheimer, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, George Gaston, Tony Perry and Alex Nguyen, Jason Albrick, and then there's J.W. Rice, Wardam Wade, Dave Medinas, Mark Squire, Joey Miller, Matthew Wagstaff, Russell Milling, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Raines, Brant Rumble, Nicholas Craig, Patrick Williams, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Ben Amos, Randall Walker, Joshua Corbett, plus our one-time and anonymous donors. Let's see. That takes us to...
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Please clap.
What we got?
Well, the first question is one you definitely wanted me to ask you, which is about the scheduling.
Oh,
and
gosh.
Which SEC teams were playing? This is a question from Jacob Fleming, who wanted to know about which away games SEC teams were playing that they should be most embarrassed or concerned about. And we've had this discussion in the past with Mississippi State playing at UMass and other teams playing on the road. And so I went through the entire SEC schedule, and the one that you brought up is the one that I think they should be concerned about, and that is Arkansas playing at Colorado State in week two, I believe. There's no other games where an SEC team is playing at a non-Power 5 team.
Yeah.
Missouri is playing at Purdue.
That's okay. That's Power Five.
It's fine. And you know, it's a Big Ten team.
Yeah.
And they, you know, but I mean, to me, that's like, you wouldn't go play at Indiana or something. I don't know, but that's the Arkansas Colorado State one is by far the most egregious one of the season.
Well, the worst, he was pointing out that who was it played at Rutgers? Arkansas?
Arkansas.
And they played Toledo at Toledo, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody played at UConn. That was the one right there that I went ape poop over last year. Was it somebody played at UConn?
Well, and Mississippi State played at UConn. I think it was Mississippi State.
Yeah, that's
and weird. They have played a game at South Alabama.
Oh, shame, shame, and for shame. Now, the weirdest one, I think, was didn't Mississippi State go to BYU? Because
maybe
that's just – that's like man lands on Mars. Mississippi State at Provo at BYU. I know lots of BYU people, and I know lots of Mississippi State people, and I'm telling you right now, the cantina scene in Star Wars has nothing – on some of the encounters you probably had in that parking lot. I mean, the Mississippi State vehicles rolled in one way, the BYU vehicles rolled in the other, and you heard, but yeah, no, you got no business playing away as an SEC team if you're, I think Missouri played somebody on the road too that we got mad at them about.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
I remember who they were, but Missouri. Yeah, you're embarrassing yourself, and you're embarrassing the conference when you do that. You just can't do it. Just say no. But that being said, I was just saying if you're going to play a non-Power Five team, Colorado State is not great, but they're decent. You know, I mean it's not UConn or UMass for crying out loud.
And it's Mike Bobo.
Yeah, I mean, they got an SEC connection. So I would be less harsh with Colorado State than I would be with a lot of teams like that. Because to me, Colorado State, if you were to pick like a handful of teams that could easily move up to Power Five status, they'd probably be on my list.
Sure. And I mean, they're in the Mountain West. And I think teams in that conference or look at the American
athletic,
you know, Central Florida, South Florida,
exactly.
Navy, Houston, those kind of teams, and Memphis. I mean, those are teams like you don't want to go to their stadium, but you know,
it's not humiliating.
It's not good,
but it's not right. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Colorado State has had many years where they were better than Colorado. So, you know, I mean. You know, I mean, honestly, Southern Miss, there was a time when if we'd gone to Southern Miss, I'd have been like, sure, of course we're going to Southern Miss. Why wouldn't we? You know, last 20 years or so, Southern Miss is kind of, as the SEC has gotten more dominant relative to other regional teams, Southern Miss has kind of dropped off. In other words, I think that fans that are younger, Auburn fans, may not remember when Southern Miss was a darn good program. But there were years when Southern Miss was easily better than Ole Miss and Mississippi State those years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, lots of years like that. Yeah,
exactly.
But they had a couple of good, I mean, 2010 or 13, I think, when our current offensive coordinator was there, they had a great offense. It was 13. Yeah. And they, you know, went and won a big bowl game. So,
yeah.
No, that's a good one. Having said that, like we talked about earlier, this discussion all comes down to money. Mm. And you're going to see it more and more down the road, teams doing a 2-for-1 or something like that. Florida is actually playing games against Colorado State in Gainesville this year as part of the repayment for buying out their previous coach's contract at Colorado State. So
that's funny. Oh boy.
One of the other questions we got this week is a question. Do you, we got at auishbone@gmail.com. Do you think Auburn will throw to the tight end and fullback more this season?
I think we're going to throw to everybody more this season, especially early. We're talking about Gus figuring out his offense. I think there will be a certain amount of figuring out who the running back is, but I think in the meantime, I think that Stidham's going to be chucking it often and deep and short and everywhere. So I expect a very mixed passing game, especially the first half of the season while we're still figuring out who's going to tote the rock.
I could see that. I could see us starting out the season passing to set up the run more than we have at any time since 2014.
Yeah.
And then, you know, later in the year, we figured out the running back situation and mm-hmm. we're playing the tougher parts of the schedule, we'll go more to the traditional running game part of the offense and balance it out.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. All right, that's it for questions for tonight.
Do we want to...
Let's take a trip around the SEC.
Do we have any around the SEC news other than what we just talked about with the road games?
There was something I wanted to bring up.
I liked how they asked Saban if he saw us like some point in the season when one of his quarterbacks would transfer, and his answer was, I don't know. He, you know, because usually they'd be like, no, we have a plan for this and that, and our quarterbacks are happy, and we'll, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was he just came out and said, no, I don't know.
I mean, they're 100% going to play both quarterbacks in game one.
Right.
And try to keep them both happy and all that kind of good stuff. Luck. The reality is, the way the situation is, the new transfer rule starts in October. So if you transfer now, you still sit out the entire season and you can't play till next year. If you wait, you're okay. And Jalen Hurts will graduate in December anyhow. And he could tell Saban, like, if Tua wins the starting job, Jalen Hurts could tell Saban, don't play me. I don't want to, you know, play me in fewer than four games. So I'm not burning a season of eligibility. You know, if Tua gets hurt, I'll come in and be the guy. But otherwise, let me sit out. And then he graduates and transfers at the end of the season. He can go wherever he wants to go, and Alabama can't block him. And he would have 2 years of eligibility left, and a lot of teams would be fighting to get him.
Sure.
I think that's probably the most likely scenario. I don't see both of them hanging around beyond this season. What Alabama's hoping is they hang around for the season. I think there's a scenario where, you know, Alabama's going to try and do the thing where it's a competition up until the, mm-hmm. you know, they don't tell who's going to start until they get ready to walk out of the tunnel or whatever for game one. And they play Louisville in the opener mm-hmm. without Lamar Jackson. So, you know, they're going to try and string it out so that both of them feel like they – you know, got fairly treated and that they don't feel like it's been handed to the other guy. So then they just pack up and leave.
Let me ask you this real quick about that. We were just talking about how the SEC is changing, right? How especially the Western teams are changing. You know that for a while there, A&M kind of had a bead on Alabama. And then for a while there, Ole Miss kind of had a bead on Alabama. Is there anybody now that, other than Auburn, that we can – I mean, LSU used to have their number years ago, but that ship sailed and sank halfway across the Pacific Ocean. Is there any team that we can look at now? I mean, you can say Mississippi State just in terms of they should be good this year, but we already know that Mississippi State does not beat Alabama just like Kentucky does not beat Florida. So can we say that there is a team other than Auburn that even has a – chance of kind of getting something going and taking it to Alabama in the next two or three years?
Is it Jimbo? In the West?
Yeah. I mean, I know that Georgia maybe be the only other one, but and maybe eventually Florida. Give them a couple of years to get it going.
Yeah.
But I mean, in the West?
I think A&M fans would say eventually that, you know, in a couple of years they'll be there.
Yeah.
I really like the new Mississippi State coach, Joe Moorhead. I think he's a really smart offensive coach. And they have a really good returning quarterback, Nick Franklin. This is one of those years. I'm not going to get into too much of this because this is barbecue preview stuff. But this is going to be kind of one of those years like Mississippi State had a couple years ago where they had all the returning experience and they had a good season. And I think with a new coach, with a different kind of offense that Alabama hasn't faced before, and an experienced quarterback, that could be a team that could give them a hard time.
And get them all the way to the fourth quarter before losing, as always. Like they did last year.
So, that's fair. I think the answer is Auburn. I mean, because, you know, regardless of which of those teams beat Alabama, one of the key things was you got to have a good quarterback. And yeah, we've got that.
That's right.
And we have a defense that, I don't care who's playing quarterback at Alabama. Our defense is going to be one of the top 10 defenses in the country. We're going to shut some teams down, and they're not going to roll up and down the field on us. So, we have a good quarterback. We'll have a really good defense. We're going to be in every game this season. So, think about teams around the country. I mean, I think Ohio State or Clemson or somebody else could be in a position to do that, to play that way against Alabama, but teams in the West, I mean, I think Auburn is the only team that, talent-wise, is on the field with them. In a couple of years, I think A&M could be there if Jimbo does his stuff. But I think in the short term, I'm interested to see Mississippi State play them.
Yeah. Well, we need some help. I mean, it's always us. We're like the front line, It's like when the Nazis were swelling up and rising up in Europe, we're like Poland or France or Russia, we're the ones that they have to deal with first, and it'd be nice to have somebody else to give them a little fit instead of the responsibility always falling to us to be the ones to stop them. But I'm happy to do it. I hope we can. I'd love to be, the ones that mess them up again. I'd love nothing more, really. But I'd like a little help. I'd like them to have a loss or two before they play us. That would be nice. I hate how, they're always undefeated when they play us. I'd like to get them banged up and bruised up a little bit sometime, maybe. So, I think the last time we beat them that they had a loss was 2010.
Mm-hmm.
That one wasn't easy. All right. Well, anything else before we wrap up this end of July show?
No, other than, it's like the SEC media days is always the signal that we're in the home stretch.
Yeah.
That it's like, I don't know what the countdown is. It's like 40 days.
Yeah. It's amazing.
40 days until kickoff. So that's exciting for me. And I, can't wait for the season.
So your takeaways from tonight's show, auwishbone.com. Go there. You can check out the Patreon. Help us out. Keep the show on the air. Help us get to Auburn for the Arkansas game. If we haven't made the big announcement, we're going to be down for the Arkansas game. John and I are going to be there on Friday and Saturday, and we're going to do a live video show. We're going to do some audio and everything, and we need help to do it. And so that's where you come in. So go and sign up. And also our big barbecue preview shows are coming up in August. And if you know of a sponsor who wants to jump on board and be the official barbecue of the AU Wishbone, give us a shout. I guess that's going to do it for this week, John. Our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of you, my love? When they have finally stripped you off the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.